Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we've talked about it quite a bit, especially since the, I guess you could call it the primary for the Wisconsin recall, in which Walker's supporters showed up, even though he really didn't have much opposition. And the Democratic turnout wasn't so great. And big Labor's candidate got crushed. But the news just keeps getting better and better. We've talked about polls that show Scott Walker at or slightly above 50%. Tom Barrett, for the most part, the Milwaukee mayor, the Democratic challenger, just outside the margin of error, around 45-44%. A new poll has Walker up 8 points. If that weren't enough to cheer about, this is Mike Allen of Politico, not exactly the Tea Party's favorite, on Morning Joe, talking about what's going on in Wisconsin right now. Here's a couple of clips from Mike Allen basically saying this thing's over.
Every indication now is that he's going to win big over the Democratic Milwaukee mayor, Tom Barrett. The left, Labor, Democrats, which plan to embarrass him, instead have made him a big national figure with a very bright future. It was money poured down the drain by Democrats on the left in a presidential election year. And the effect of this is going to be to make Wisconsin look better for Mitt Romney.
Jim, how could we expect more than that?
Greg, do you find yourself periodically watching your side, our common cause of conservatism, engaged in some big fight, and the coverage is never all that optimistic, and you know it's going to be a big fight in Wisconsin? The recall election is a very, very big deal in the fight for containing government, in restraining the growth of public sector union pension funds, and all of these other key issues of spending and taxation, and who's going to actually control the fiscal destiny of these states. And then once the things start tipping in your direction, and let's not overestimate this, polls have looked pretty good for Scott Walker, but being ahead 50% to the mid-40s is nothing to, break out the party hats on. And then all of a sudden, the moment it starts looking good, it's a Republican win. We all knew that. No big deal. That was that. This is old news. I don't want to make too much fun of Mike Allen. I guess I give him credit for calling it as he sees it. You can just kind of sense the incredulity in Joe Scarborough's voice. Things are looking good for Scott Walker. If there's momentum in these final days, and if Wisconsin Democrats start getting depressed and asking what's the use and not enthusiastic in these final days, then maybe it'll turn out to be not that close at all. But the idea that the conventional wisdom has changed so quickly, I'm glad it's happening, Greg. But I'm still kind of like, where did this come? When did this happen? As of this morning, Scott Walker is expected to win by a lot. And you almost, if you're paranoid, you'd say this is the Washington Beltway types trying to set some sort, raise expectations for Scott Walker. So if he wins by 5 percentage points or 4 percentage points or whatever, oh, it's disappointing. He didn't meet expectation, or some other strange thing there. It's just a very strange change in this. It's good news. I'm not really complaining about it. I'm just mystified at how quickly this has become just a presumed Scott Walker victory, and a big one at that.
The expectations game could be at play here. If you're in Wisconsin, I don't think Scott Walker's supporters need to be given extra encouragement to get out there, but we'll give it to them anyway. A week from Tuesday, make sure you're there voting for Scott Walker to stay on, because he has been right there on the front lines pretty much since day one of taking over, doing exactly what he said he would do, taking a lot of slings and arrows for it. So Scott Walker should become a conservative star as a result of this. On to martini number two now, Jim. And you would think labeling an entire group of people based on their facial characteristics would be bad for you politically, but apparently not if you're Elizabeth Warren. Her of high cheekbone, like all Native Americans, we've chronicled that to a large extent. She claimed to be of Cherokee heritage. Then we thought maybe she was 132nd. Now there's a lot of people saying she wasn't at all. But according to a new Suffolk University poll, which you chronicle on the campaign spot, what was once a 9-point lead for Republican Scott Brown is now down to 1, which is obviously a statistical tie. More people, almost half, think Warren was telling the truth about being Native American. 28% said she was not telling the truth. Pretty even split on whether they think she benefited by listing herself as a minority. But 69% of likely voters said that it's not a significant story. So Scott Walker's basically in a tie. We thought this would brand Elizabeth Warren as kind of pathetic and willing to do anything to advance herself. And apparently in Massachusetts, they don't care.
They just cannot get enough powwow chow, Greg. this is really frustrating news, because the good news is Scott Brown is still ahead by a percentage point. I had a couple people remind me this morning that Scott Brown trailed all the polls to Martha Coakley until the very end in Massachusetts. And so, you know, some people said, remember, this is still a state that's default setting is Democratic, and so this doesn't necessarily mean that she's, you know, as strong as she may look in this poll. But it's still kind of galling that here is Elizabeth Warren behaving in a manner that across the political spectrum, the Larry Sabatos of the world are saying, look, this looks kind of ridiculous for her to be insisting that based on a 1/32nd group that she qualifies as a member of a minority group and deserves the kind of to be recognized as the first woman of color at Harvard Law School and all kinds of other, you know, really just generally implausible claims to minority status that just do not fit. And they just come across as gaming the system and something disingenuous and dishonest and you know, more than a little condescending when she goes into, well, Pawpaw had high cheekbones, just like all the Native Americans. It really, there's not a single Native American in the entire world with cheekbones that aren't that high. Aren't we stereotyping a bit there? Here's Elizabeth Warren looking like a joke and not really suffering at all from the from this, and in fact, her numbers are actually up a bit from the last Suffolk poll. Some folks are pointing out that amongst those who have heard of this story, she's down by a larger margin. But in a way, you'd kind of expect that, wouldn't you, Greg? That, you know, that if you're a Scott Brown fan, the story is funny and the coolest thing in the whole wide world, and we just want these things to go on, and the world cannot become a better place than the day we first heard the words "pow wow chow." If you're a Elizabeth Warren, you know, Massachusetts Democrat supporter, you either may or may not have heard of this story, and you're much more likely to say this is not a big deal. It gets down kind of to honesty and character and how willing you are to tell the press and the public things that are just flat out not true and supremely implausible. And the fact that there's no indication she's suffering in the polls is a rather depressing fact about the state of Massachusetts politics right now.
Yeah, interesting polling. In addition to that, good news for Scott Brown. He's up to 58% favorability rating, so that's good for him. The bad news is, in another poll, I believe, from Marist, Obama's ahead of Romney 59-34, and when both are on the ballot, that could be slightly bad news for Brown if Obama is running away with it, which he probably will, unfortunately, in Massachusetts. But
Ray, I'll just jump in there and note that I had been hearing from some folks who said that, look, Massachusetts is not really on the target list for the Romney campaign, but that there was some polling that was looking interesting. Some people had said that Romney was actually within single digits of Obama, which would be kind of surprising. Wow. At this point, it remains to be seen whether there's any indication that Massachusetts will be any closer than it usually is. And you know, at this point, no reason to think Romney will do any better than every other typical Republican in recent years in Massachusetts.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's probably true. Maybe a little bit better, but yeah, I'd be surprised if he was competitive there, certainly. On to Martini number three now. Jim, and the Obama campaign, of course, has been fully engaged in the bright, shiny object strategy of talking about anything other than the economy. So now they've decided to talk about the economy and just basically fictionalize everything that's happened in recent years. Here's President Obama, I believe, at a fundraiser yesterday, since that's where he spends all of his time, talking about how it's really the Republicans' fault that we're now racking up this record debt.
I don't know how they've been bamboozling folks into thinking that they are the responsible, fiscally disciplined party. They run up these wild debts. And then when we take over, we got to clean it up. And they point and say, look how irresponsible they are. Look at the facts. Look at the numbers. And now I want to finish the job.
All right, let's look at the numbers. The Bush administration, and I don't think any conservative would argue that the Republican Congress and President Bush did a good job at all on fiscal discipline. Sir, you have racked up more in 4 years than they did in eight. And when you say you want to finish the job, what does that mean? 10 trillion? 12 trillion? I'm not sure exactly what that means. Jim, I'm really hoping these Jedi mind tricks don't work.
Last week was debt and deficit week for the Romney campaign. And while I, you know, generally agree with the assessment that the debt is too darn high, to paraphrase a New York gubernatorial candidate, I wonder if they were doing this early in the campaign to kind of get it out of the way. Because there are times when the debt and deficit are really big issues front and center in the public's mind during the debt ceiling fight or during the rise of the Tea Parties. And then there are weeks and months where it just feels like the debt and deficit just kind of fade into the back pages, if that, that for some reason voters just aren't that worried about that. So obviously they must have done something, because now the Obama campaign feels the need to come out and say, no, no, we're not nearly as bad on the debt as you think we are. And one of the big centerpieces has been a really inane column over at CBS Market Watch that basically said that because the rate of increase in the annual deficits has only grown modestly, the Obama spending binge never happened. And, you know, basically they are putting forth a big claim of trying to get people that a decline or a gradual increase in the rate of increase is the same as not increasing actual spending. It's percentages versus actual numbers. And let's put it into actual numbers. You know, before 2008, we had never had a $1 trillion deficit. It was always measured in mere billions, and the fact that we actually have the concept of mere billions is kind of disturbing. But we've had 4 years of $1 trillion deficits in our history, 2009, 2010, 2011, and 2012. Now, if you want to say 2009, some of that is on Bush. If you want to say some of that's because of TARP, fine, but Obama supported TARP. I don't understand why that would be considered as, you know, not something he should have scored against him. But even that was supposed to be a one-time expenditure. And lo and behold, 2010, 2011, 2012, it's projected to go down to 2013, but you know what? Everything was projected to go down. Budget numbers are always projected to get better, and strangely, they don't. So expect to see more of this. It's an astonishingly cynical and inaccurate assertion, and I'm kind of struck that how many Democrats are really trying to say, well, look, if we have really small percentage increases on record spending, it's not that bad.
And in addition to that, and again, we do not defend the fiscal discipline of the Republicans in the last decade because there wasn't much of it. But if you go back to when the Democrats retook control of Congress back in 2007 and then compare that track record over the last 5 or 6 years, the amount of deficits and debt piling up is even more astounding. Yes, the president should have done something about it, President Bush, that is. But Democrats have been the one punching down the accelerator for the last 5 or 6 years now. And I don't think most people are fooled by that, certainly the ones who aren't dyed-in-the-wool liberals, but I guess we'll find out in November.
At this point, a $400 to $500 billion deficit doesn't look that bad.
Sadly,
isn't
that's
sad?
True.
That really just seems, you know, boy, we'd actually be breathing easier with only a couple hundred billion in deficit spending.
Awful. Folks, catch Jim Garrity tomorrow on The Morning Rundown with Chuck Todd on MSNBC. He won't be here for our podcast as a result of that. So, Jim, have a great time and a great weekend.
Looking forward to Greg. If I can do my cycle of my regular shows, that would include Daily Rundown on MSNBC, Hannity's Great American Panel, and Howard Kurtz's Reliable Sources at some point in the coming weeks, which makes me a reliably rundown American.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Dan Foster and I tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch.